One day he came home and told my mom, "I'm going to take a little break at lunch and go over to the Elks Club next door to the school. They're playing poker over there." And she said, "Oh, really?" She said, "Are they betting?" And he said, "I'm not going to get involved with that." That's exactly what happened. From that point on, it overtook his life and our life. When they're so entrenched in their addiction, the outside world, and that includes relationships and families and other things, they're detached because they're so in their addiction. If we don't pay attention, we're just all going to be like droids sitting there looking at our phones. Who wants to live in that world?
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Stacey J. Ladyman, the author of Shep and the King of Hearts. Stacey, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure being with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is going to be a conversation that I think is long overdue for the channel because most of the time I'm talking to people who are in recovery from a gambling addiction. And today, that's not the case, but this is a way of looking at the problem that we've never done here. Why don't you tell us, what's your personal connection to problem gambling?
I grew up with a gambling father. My parents divorced due to this issue, and we lived out west in Idaho, and my parents had been married for over 20 something years, about 26 years. And my dad was well educated, had a master's in education, and he was a vice principal of a big junior high school. One day he came home and told my mom, "I'm going to take a little break at lunch and go over to the Elks Club next door to the school. They're playing poker over there." And she said, "Oh, really?" She said, "Are they betting?" And he said, "Oh yeah, but that's too rich for my blood." He said, I'm not going to get involved with that." But that's exactly what happened. And from that point on, it overtook his life and our life. It was a long time ago, Rob, but I wanted to write this story, Shep and the King of Hearts, to tell the story about the relationship between the daughter and the father, and how, even as adults, when we go through situations and maybe someone's come out of recovery in our family, we desire that relationship. And so I kind of wrote the story around that, how this adult daughter wanted to still have a relationship with her gambling dad.
Wow. And I definitely want to dive into the plot of the book to try to understand, why you did certain things throughout it, what led to certain symbolism throughout the book. But let's go way back then. Like, how old were you when your dad made that first trip to the Elks Club that you can remember?
Well, I don't know my actual age when that happened, but through it all, I'm guesstimating I was probably more like, 5, 6 years old. And I had two siblings as well that were older. I was the youngest. I didn't know a lot of what was going on, except that I knew he was absent from the house a lot. Then came the day where we were beginning to get phone calls for people wanting to collect their gambling debts. That was just a line that crossed for my mom. My mom had been dealing with it for about 5, 6 years, really heavy, trying to work it out. But that's one thing that's so different today is we have resources to help with, and there's great people like yourself that are out there talking about this issue. Back then, no. It was very taboo to even talk about that. And then plus my parents got a divorce, and that was a really big deal back then. Just to even say you were getting a divorce was a big deal, much less that your husband was a gambling addict. So, it's hopeful in the fact that we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but it was one of the reasons why I wrote the book. I wanted to talk about this issue, be out front with it, and just talk about what it does to the family.
There's a statistic out there. I think it's, and I mean, don't quote me here. I think it's for every person that has a gambling addiction, 7 to 10 others on average are impacted around them directly as a result of the addiction. I don't think there's many people out there thinking about what does the 5, 6-year-old daughter or son of someone with a gambling problem think? Because, you're probably not thinking, oh, well, they took a 401k loan, so I got to figure that out. You're 6 years old, right? But you're thinking, where the hell is dad? And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see a lot of divorces happening as a result of this addiction. But I mean, I want to just thank you for being here to share the story, because this is a perspective that I've never heard anyone talk about. And so that's what makes it particularly unique. Before we got on this call, you had mentioned that the lost time was something that's really impacted you. What did you mean by lost time as it relates to your father's gambling addiction?
Well, I will definitely answer that. But I must say, I also want to talk about the present, what I notice, what I'm noticing now when I listen to podcasts, when I look at like your station and your different social media channels, and just people that are gambling. The amount of time is really mind-boggling to me. All of us only have 24 hours in every day. And you get up, it's not only the time that is eroded, it's the mind and the complete control that this thing can take hold of. And my dad was definitely there, you know, and to answer your question, I really grew up in want of a relationship with him. And I knew that the thing that was separating us was his gambling addiction. It just took over his life. At the end of his life, my siblings and I had to go out and take care of his remains. He had died. We got out his billfold and there were all the casino cards and everything. It just was still such a part of his life. It caused a 40-year estrangement for me, because I think, Rob, he stayed away. After my parents divorced, my mother took us back to her hometown in the South, and Dad would come around or call every so often. We would hear this and that from him, but we really didn't have that relationship. Growing up, I spent time daydreaming in my room like any teenager, and I would think about, what is he doing? Is he in jail? Is he working a job? Is he gambling right now? You know, my mind would just go crazy on what in the world would keep him that far away. So it's a mental health question too. And I think that estrangement in itself in all addiction forms has its own, it's its own thing, you know, but as far as gambling addiction, I just feel that in today's world now, present day, we're seeing the time that is just being stripped away from families. Not only just the gambler who's spending an inordinate amount of time with it. There's no time. I know for sure. You know, I've raised a family. I've raised two kids. It takes almost everything you've got just to meet the needs of those kids every day. So how in the world are you going to be able to gamble and do that too? So, and do it well.
It's so hard to even start to think about that. You know, oftentimes on this channel, we will get the firsthand perspective of someone who's, you know, either gambling still or in recovery from a gambling addiction. Were you ever able at any point to have a conversation with your dad about why he was gambling, about any of the situation, or was it total estrangement on that end?
Well, we had a really interesting meeting. This happened later in my adult life. I had children, which he didn't know about. Like I say, just the addiction took over and he was in his own world. But one time we always tried to go what I call back home. I'm a Southerner. And so we would go back home to see family in the summer and I make sure our kids got that experience and everything. So I called home. Mom said, well, you're coming in great, but you've got a real big surprise coming for you. And I said, what's that? And she said, your dad's coming to town. I said, what? And she said, oh yeah, he's coming to town. And I said, okay, you know, what's the deal? And I think we kind of determined that he wanted to see his mother, who was now really aging and really in dementia. You know, he came to town. He came on a Greyhound bus, the old fashioned way, across the country, because he couldn't afford to do it any other way, I'm sure. Rob, when he got off that bus and I looked at him, I was like, he looked like a Santa Claus cowboy.
Wow.
And yet he was my father. And I could look at his eyes and know, and he was, you know, he smiled when he saw me. I knew that it brought him joy to see me. and my siblings. I wrote a chapter in my book about this, and it's entitled Santa Claus Cowboy, and it is the point in which Chris has to meet her father. And so we had this meeting and we all sat down, but he was so entrenched. It was obvious because he would talk about jobs that he had and he didn't have now. And, you know, you could just tell the gambling was still a part of his life. It had created such a void. He just didn't have a concept. I think I mentioned I had children and he, oh, you do. You know, he just was so in his own world. And I've worked with people in recovery for other addictions before. And I noticed the same trait that when they're so entrenched in their addiction, the outside world, and that includes relationships and families and other things, they're detached because they're so in their addiction. I could see that he just was definitely entrenched in it. We had a pretty good conversation, all of us together, but it was I would call it was a little tense, but it was, I would say too, I felt like God provided that time for us to just come back together as a little family unit for a minute. And it was 2 years later then that he died. That in of itself was difficult because we went to the funeral home and the funeral director said, "I am so glad you have come. You know what, my brother, sister, and I, we paid for the little service we had." And he said, "I'm so glad you came, because if you had not come, we would have had to bury him in a pauper's grave with all the other gamblers."
Wow. Like, as in, like, no one was attending the ceremony. No one was, you know.
No one was there anymore for these people that had been so far in their gambling addiction that they, you know, they were just out there on the fringes of society. It was heartbreaking. And it really stuck with me that, wow, you know, this is how far he had come. He had a lovely family. We were, you know, it would have been good. I think some of Dad's thing was like, he felt like he's going to make $1 million and he's going to, you know, it's going to be great. You know, it's going to be great. What's great is spending time with your kids, spending time with your parents, your siblings, that's what's great. Time with those you love, and maybe time where, you know, you can take up a new activity. Or the thing I talk about with my dad, he was a big outdoorsman. He could hunt, fish, do it all. And he did it out on Salmon River out in Idaho. And I would have loved to have spent those types of kinds of times, you know. Yeah. That would have been great to learn some of that and be out in nature and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what people miss out on when they go down this road.
If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, "just one more bet," or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. It jogs a memory of a man that I interviewed probably about 4 or 5 months ago. His name's Harj. Harj was telling a story about how he had run up about 250,000 pounds of debt. He's from the UK. From his gambling. The whole time he's stressed out. He's like, "I have to earn this back. I have to get this back for my family to be happy." And he said the most pivotal moment in his recovery was when he took his son to a McDonald's and he got like a 6 count of the chicken nuggets or whatever. And they get back in the car and the son said, like, "I'm so happy right now. Like, I have everything I want." And he was just with his dad with his chicken nuggets. And Harsh was like, "That was the moment that everything kind of clicked for me, that I was focused on the wrong things." And I think gambling addicts, I mean, I am one, so I can speak to it. We have this idea that once we get to where we want to be, everything else can be fixed, but we never get there. And that's the problem. We always keep moving the goalpost forward. Do you see in the work that you've done kind of since, you know, writing this book, since entering this space, what's going on in the minds of families, particularly maybe, as you had mentioned, mothers of some sons that are on that path now? Let's, you know, shift into that. What are you seeing right now in the present day as it relates to affected others in an addiction?
I think it's a space that needs some resources. These people are heartbroken. They're desperate to find help for their loved one. They just want to see it all get fixed, and they want wholeness again with their families. And so I think there's hope that, you know, they are. The thing about, I've met with some moms and sons that are, and it's not just sons, it could be daughters too. Their child is so entrenched, and they're trying to do something about it. These moms are out there and they're talking about it, and I'm so proud of them. That is part of what it takes to make breakthroughs, is we've got to be open and talk about it. I was one that I didn't want to talk about this. I actually didn't want to tell this story years ago. Why would I do that? I had my husband and I have had a great life here in New Jersey, and we have two kids, and, you know, there was no really reason for me to bring up this fact of my past, but then I couldn't do it. I felt like I've got to get out there and talk about this, because people need people, and they need to hear the stories, and they need to be brave like these moms are, and saying, no, I'm going to fight for my son. I'm going to fight for my daughter. This, I want them to come back home, in the sense of come back home to be with us as a family. I think my book is definitely can speak into that, and is a resource for hope for people to just hear the story of how I struggled myself. I struggled with wanting that relationship that I could not get, but yet I found out, and Chris, just a little bit about the book. Chris is the main character, a woman, and she runs a behavioral hospital in New Jersey. And so she really has it all together. She's has all the accolades. She's gone to school, and she's runs this big hospital. And so they treat all kinds of addictions. The trouble is all of a sudden her father calls and says he's coming into town after a 25-year estrangement, and he's the gambling addict. And so at the same time, there's a hot chaplain. He's not a curmudgeon, you know, old guy. He's a hot, good looking. He has to be, right, Rob?
We got to hit all the possible audiences, you know?
It's just more fun. I don't know what to say, but anyway. So this hot chaplain, Shep, is on the scene, and he's had heartache himself. He's, you know, he lost a wife young in the story. And so as the father comes on the scene, Chris has to deal with it. And she thinks she's going to apply all the things, all the resources she has in her toolbox that work with addictions. But she soon finds out that he's not complying. And so Shep, and it becomes a kind of a triangle of how they're going to deal with this problem. And so the story goes out to Atlantic City and ends up in the wilds of Idaho. You know, I love to travel and see new places, and so this was great for me. And of course, I was born in Idaho. So it was a great chance for me to go back to my roots and kind of grab the beauty of that place. So anyway, I think that this book can tell the story of how this woman struggled trying to use her own resources, and she had to learn something. She had to learn about not just applying what she thinks works. She's got to learn something herself on the inside. So that's not to give it all away, but the journey is kind of that too. And then you get to see a little bit of the mindset of this gambler and how he's so deep-seated in his addiction.
You know, you'd already mentioned kind of that one thing you wanted to get out of writing this was to put your voice out there and help other people who might be going through a similar situation. What have you gotten out of it on a personal level in terms of the writing process, in terms of thinking through the plot, thinking through the symbolism within the book? What has it done for you and maybe, you know, reflecting on your own past?
Thanks for asking that. You know, when I first started this writing journey, which was 9 years ago, so I mean, my book is not, it's like 202 pages. So it's kind of a joke for me because people, you know, in the writing world, like, how many words did you get written today? Or here's the writing challenge. Let's do 10,000 words in a week. You know, and I'm like, if I averaged that out 9 years, I might come 30 words per, you know, it's really, it's pitiful. But you know what? It's okay because it took me time because I wanted to do it as best I could. And I wanted it to be a project with excellence. And I feel I've been able to do that. But the other thing I noticed when I would first be in critique groups and we would read our material, just to read a chapter about my dad, my voice would start cracking. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to do this because I can't even. And so I worked through those things. And I feel like, you know, I'm a faith-based person. I feel like God helped me along. And there was that still small voice inside of me that was helping me all along to know it's okay. And I just got better and better. And now, you know, I'm out here talking about it and loving it. So I think we need to be open about it. You know, I got up this morning, I made my tea. I'm sitting there at 7 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it was, 6:37. I'm drinking my tea. I turn on the news. What's the first thing I see? I see an advertisement for gambling. And I said, okay, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm doing this, because it affected my life so profoundly and it affects other families. There's more to this life than being stuck in this addiction. You can get out. You can get out and you can have time with your families. You can go learn to fly fish, or, you know, go to McDonald's and eat those chicken nuggets. And, you know, it's, I want that for people. So that's what drives me and fuels me every day in this work.
Since 2018, the statistics say you're 30% more likely to have a gambling addiction in the United States than, from 2018 till now, you've become 30% more likely. I think the number's a lot higher than that, in fairness, and I think it's going to keep climbing. You know, not to get too negative, we'll spin it around to be positive later, but where do you see this heading? Where do you see gambling addiction heading in the United States?
You know, I'm not an expert. There's people out there that are researchers that would be able to speak so much better to that than me. But one of the stats I've seen from, I think it's addiction.com, is that over 80% of Americans gamble. So that's a lot. I think that that means like, okay, a scratch off ticket of this, of that, you know, play the lottery, go to a casino. So again, I think we're saying that a person that gets addicted to it is what becomes a real issue. I never had an appetite for it at all because I just, what it had done to my home life, you know, as a young child. I just see people, there's just too easy access of it. You know, it's on the phone, it's anywhere you turn. And now we have celebrities endorsing it.
And I think a better way to even segue into it is like, where do you see the effects of like this mass spread of gambling on families? Put yourself in the shoes of the little girl who's now 5 years old and her dad is now doing the gambling, but you know, he's still in the house. It's just that he's on the phone and he's zoned out because he's doing it in front of the TV. What do you think the impact's going to be on family life over the next decade in the United States?
Wow. You know, I think the sociologists, they will be studying this, not only just gambling, but you know, the phone, the tablet, or the phone themselves. When I was raising my kids, we were just on the cusp of getting into this whole world. So I was I feel lucky because the only thing I had to watch out for was my son, you know, sometimes playing video games, but he was one of those. He said, you know, he'd put it down. He wanted to go out and actually hit the ball himself or use a hockey stick or a lacrosse stick down the field. So he was out there doing the actual sport. And I was thankful for that. But I think that for families, if we don't watch out, if we do not pay attention and start making more noise about this, that we are headed for not good. You know, families, there's no way you can connect with families if you don't put your phone down and look at them and talk to them and be with them. It can be something simple. I tell people all the time, like, okay, well, if you wish for some time thing with your, if you had a time wish with a family member, it doesn't have to be go to Disneyland and, you know, or it could be, but, you know, make it something simple that you haven't done, and try that, because you'll be surprised at how that will open some doors for you and your family. Mm-hmm. You know, like I worked with this one woman in recovery, and we made strawberry jam together. Okay. Sure. So I grew up, when I met my husband, we were walking along a path and there was all these beautiful blackberries. And I said, wow, look at those. And he said, hey, you want to make jam? And I'm like, what? You want to make jam? I don't even know how to do that. And he said, no, we'll go get the jars and we'll get the sugar and we'll do it. And really, Rob, to this day, I remember thinking, no one's spent that kind of time with me like that on something. Like it did. I remember thinking about my dad when he asked me to do that. So we did that, and that's who I married, you know, and we've been married 42 years. So it worked out. But fast forward then, I had another jam experience with a woman that took care of our kids some of the time. Her cousin had a strawberry field in Jersey. So we went out and we picked those strawberries and made jam with my kids. And it was a great experience. And then the next time was with this gal in recovery that I was working with. And she was at a recovery house. And I said, let's go make some jam. And she said, well, okay, it sounds kind of good. Well, it was a really hot day in Jersey. And so we drive out to the fields and we get out there and we start heading out to the fields. And she goes, you mean we got to walk out here and pick the berries? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, you mean we have to bend down and pick them? I said, yes, we do. It was such a concept to her. And so then we picked the berries and we had beautiful baskets of berries. We went back, took some great pictures. Then we went back and we made the jam. And she told me that that experience was so enriching for her that she called me years later. She's now been out of recovery. You know, she's worked on her college degrees. She's married. It's great. She's really come full circle out of her recovery. But she told me, she said, I want that recipe for strawberry jam because I want to pass it on to my stepkids and because they want to do it for Mother's Day. And I'm like, you know, it just keeps going. It's the essence of just spending time and maybe picking out a new activity. I guess I think that if we don't pay attention, we're just all going to be like droids sitting there looking at our phones. Who wants to live in that world? There's much, much more out here for us. You know,
I'm in agreement about the not wanting to just drone on and, you know, look at the phone and like completely disconnect. And it's something that I'm still working on. But, you know, one thing that comes into my mind is like, what would you tell yourself now, you know, knowing all that you know about, you know, addiction and recovery, learning everything that you've learned up until this point, if you could go back and have a conversation with your 5-6-year-old self when your dad makes that trip to the poker club over the next 5 years, maybe at any point during that time, what would you tell yourself?
That is tough because I was blessed with a mom that was our protector and our guide. As a 5-year-old vulnerable child, you are vulnerable, you know, to parents and the home and everything that's going on. So I feel very, very lucky and blessed that I did have that protector. And I would just let me say to the one parent that's not the gambler, it's your job to protect. It's your job to make sure that you create boundaries. You want the gambler to come around, but you've got to watch out for those others in your house too. So that's number one. But what I would tell my five-year-old self, I still want to say, come on, Dad, let's go camping. You know, actually, that's what I think about, Rob. I can't say to her, well, be strong because it's going to be okay, because it wasn't okay. You know, which leads me to kind of to your second question is how did I make through this, and how have I come to this point where I can talk about it and it doesn't just bring me to tears? And that's my faith. My faith has really been the thing that has brought me through to this moment. I feel like God doesn't want us to be detached. He wants relationship with us, number one, and he wants us to have relationships with our loved ones, number two. So it's like when you're focused on that instead of an addiction that may be, you know, driving you away from those things, that's how I made it through. And that's, I learned, you know, when my mom, again, the protector brought us back. And, you know, I did have surrounding family that was so supportive as well. My grandfather, which I dedicated my book to. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't have made it back out of that, because he provided the finances for us to get home, get settled, and resettled with our life. All those things matter. And not everybody has all those networks, but I learned at a young age, 10, 11, that I had a heavenly father that cared for me. And I wanted to draw near to him because I sure didn't have an earthly one. So this heavenly father had more for me than I could ever imagine. And it was something that drew me to write this book. So I'm excited to get out there and talk to people about the possibilities of coming out of this world that can sometimes be very dark. There's hope and there's possibilities and there's an abundant life out there for you.
Stacey, thank you so much for being here and for sharing that incredibly powerful story. To anyone that's interested in reading her book, we've linked it in the description of this video. And to anyone that wants to hear a story of someone in recovery from a gambling addiction, check out this video and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.